What the If is brought to you by listeners like you, thanks to our Patreon members, patreon.com/whattheif. Go there now and find out how you can become a member and get all kinds of cool rewards. And thank you for supporting our mission for science education and science fun. Welcome to What the If, Late Night Snack Edition. Anything could happen. Late Night Snack Edition. That's just a tease of our If coming up in just a moment. Stay tuned. Our thought experiment of the week. With me is our chief virologist from Rockefeller University, Gabby Panicia. Gabby, how are you?
I am currently suffering from a disease called thesis brain mushies. That's the technical term. But I'm otherwise perfectly fine.
Excellent. Excellent. Yes, you're working on your PhD thesis, which will be finished in about a month.
Yeah. I mean, ideally, hopefully it'll be done a little bit sooner.
Yeah.
It's one of these things, right, where like no matter how far ahead you are, somehow the process always expands to take up exactly how much time you give it. It's very much like a gas in that sense. So
it's a gas.
Yeah. I'm sure I will still, like, even as much as I'm like, I'm way ahead of schedule, I'm sure the day before I'm going to be up until 2 a.m. sweating bullets for some reason or another.
Yeah. 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 Well, it's also the closer you get to the deadline, the more your mind focuses and becomes, you know, sees all the flaws that you just want to get rid of all at the last minute. So that's good. But we're very excited for you. We're rooting for you. So
yeah,
kudos on your progress. Our other fearless leader, Matt Stanley, from New York University, is not here today because apparently, again, there is a some sort of crisis somewhere in the history of science. And Matt has gone back in time. He has, does he have a phone, like a phone box that he travels in? Or is it
like a Doctor Who?
Yeah, kind like a of... Doctor Who thing. Yeah.
I feel like it's got to be like a lectern.
Yeah.
Instead, right. Like he goes and stands behind the lectern, and that's how he gets zapped through time.
Right.
We don't want to get too copyright infringement-y, so I think it can't be like a police box or a telephone.
Exactly, booth. A police box. That's what I mean. Yeah. Exactly. It's a lectern, and the lectern is taller on the inside, so it expands. Wonderful. Throwing around some Doctor Who for our Whovians out there. So Matt, he's away. He'll be back next week. Also, coming up, we got a very exciting guest coming up in a week or two. We're very excited. We're having Chris Carberry come back. He was with us in the past with his book, Alcohol in Space, which was super fun. And he's got a new book coming out. So stay tuned for that. That's going to be a great show. But this week, we carry on. We soldier on. And by the way, I'm Philip Shane, a documentary filmmaker, and I'm just here for the ride, and happy to be here. I'm just happy to play, as they say in the Super Bowl. Our if this week. Now, Gabby, some people may not know what is that. Some people may not understand the syntax or something of that sentence. An if. What is an if? What do we mean when we say an if this week? Yeah.
So every week we pick something to change about the universe, some what-if kind of scenario that we're going to run with, and that's our if. And then, you know, we try to follow the consequences of that as far out as we possibly can. Sometimes break the universe in the process, but don't worry about that. You're along for the ride now.
That's right. Exactly.
We put it back together by the end.
We will try. We'll try. Let's stay tuned. Let's see what happens. We need your help
as well. We haven't broken the universe really solidly in a while, I think.
It might happen today, I think.
Yeah, we should get cracking on that one.
Yeah, I think snacks would break the universe. And so what are we talking about with these snacks? Well, sometimes our thought experiment is brought to us by you, listeners. So I encourage you, as always, submit your ideas, as many of you have been doing. In fact, the past few weeks have been all submitted by audience members. You can go to our website, whattheif.com, and hit contact and send in your ideas. We accept them all. No idea too big or too small, as you'll find out. And sometimes our the thought experiment is ripped from the headlines, or as I say, maybe exported as a PDF from the headlines, since our headlines these days are on the web. And today's extraordinary story comes to us from Scientific American, a fine institution, a fine publication. And the headline is, this is from March 6th, Scientific American. And there is a photo. I'll just imagine in your own mind this photo, since we're an audio-only program, and proud of it. But there is a picture of an adorable, what would you say, that's a tan-colored, a beige-colored Labrador retriever.
Yeah. Yeah. Beige is a good description.
Beige. A beige Labrador retriever. And a giant bowl of delicious looking cat food. And the headline is, "Tubby Labradors may be at the mercy of their genes, not just too many treats." So right off the bat, you can tell that the author of this article, Megan Bartels, is having fun with this story. By not many headlines begin with the word tubby. One in four, I'll continue reading here just a little bit. One in four Labrador retrievers carries a gene that tricks their brain into thinking they're starving. I think I may have that same gene. Megan writes, "If your Labrador retriever seems hungry all the time, it may be because they are. These dogs are notorious among veterinarians for their tendency to pack on the pounds. And in previous research, scientists found that one quarter of Labradors, as well as two-thirds of a less common breed of dogs called flat-coated retrievers," you don't hear about the flat-coated retriever that often, "they carry a genetic mutation that is associated with obesity in other animals. And in new experiments, researchers found that dogs with this mutation both feel hungrier between meals and burn less energy than their counterparts do." So I'm just going to jump down a little bit, read a little bit more of this. The first experiment, nicknamed the, quote, "sausage in a box," unquote, test, brought labs into the lab. Megan's having fun writing this, about 3 hours after the dogs had eaten breakfast. Researchers showed each dog a sausage, then closed it in a plastic box with holes so the dog could smell but not eat the treat. Then they watched how the dogs interacted with the box and for how long. The researchers found that the dogs with the POMC mutation were more focused on the sausage box, spending about twice as much time interacting with or manipulating it. I'm going to run down to the end here, just wrapping up this article. At the bottom, it says, dogs with the mutation can stay at a healthy weight, but they need their owner's help to do so. In particular, one of the scientists says that spreading out meals throughout the day, resisting the puppy eyes begging for human food, oh, that's hard, and giving the dogs lots of exercise are key, as is giving them something to think about besides their innate hunger. Quote, "We hate being hungry. You don't like it. I don't like it. The dogs probably don't like it either," she says. "So keeping them distracted and occupied seems to be helpful." Again, I think that's a good advice for all of us. But this leads us to the if. So, Gabby, how do we see an article like this and we translate it into a thought experiment. So what do we do, and what is your, what experiment could we run from this? What does this inspire us to do?
So whenever we see new science, normally what we try to do is you know, talk about how something like this might affect people, or, you know, just talk about the science around it in general. So I think for the sake of us, we're people, we're a little self-centered on ourselves. It would be interesting to talk about, you know, what if this was a thing that affected all of us, that we were all the Labrador equivalents of people.
Exactly. And so now we're going to announce the fanfare, and what safety precautions should people take advantage of before we play the fanfare?
This might be a time to put a padlock on the snack cabinet, but it might not be quite so dangerous as some of our other ones. So I think that might be all you need.
Yeah. Unless if you're on a really good dieting streak, you know, and you haven't broken your diet in a long time, then definitely get the padlock on. If, however, you're already off the wagon, then, you know,
Yeah, grab the cheese puffs.
Grab the cheese puffs as we ask, what the if? We humans were hungry all the time. All the time. What if we had to eat far more, far, far, far more food than we already do? Imagine. Just to continue. So I think I'm imagining, you know, essentially, like, what if we had to eat? Are there animals? I feel like there are, right? Animals that kind of have to eat all the time or graze most
of
the time.
Yeah. So yeah. We should talk maybe about the difference in what's going on here with, like, hunger versus, like, metabolism, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there are animals that do have to eat, like, all the time. I'm now, like, completely blanking on what they are. I'm sure my Animal Planet watching younger self is screaming at me right now. But yeah, there are some animals with extremely high metabolisms. I think hummingbirds, like, are one where, like, even if they don't have to eat all the time, they literally have to, when they sleep, go into, like, a form of hibernation called torpor, precisely because they run so hot. They have, you know, they would spend so much energy just asleep if they didn't go into that lower metabolic state that they would starve and die. So some animals really do have extremely high metabolisms. That is not what's happening here with the Labradors.
Mm-hmm.
So in our body, we have circuits that regulate hunger. So there's two hormones that really do a lot of the controlling. It's balance between two of them, ghrelin and leptin. So ghrelin is a hormone that's produced by your stomach when your stomach's empty. So that's signaling your brain, hey, it's time to eat right now. The other one is leptin. That's produced by fat tissue that sort of helps suppress appetite. That's the, hey, we've got enough fat stores, we're full. The mutation that these dogs have is not in either of these hormones, but it is in a precursor for some peptides, so for some hormone peptides. It's essentially, they have a mutation in a gene that makes this big precursor molecule that gets cut into four separate hormones that are really useful for the brain. So by having this one mutation, it's affecting four other things. And one of those things does regulate appetite. So assumably, if you are not making enough of this thing, then you're not feeling sated when you eat. And so then your brain is constantly thinking you're hungry. And so for these dogs, part of that circuit is that there's also a decrease in behavior to conserve energy. So unlike that, you know, little shrew creature that, you know, has to eat all the time in order to maintain its metabolism, this is like the, hey, you're kind of starving. You need to lay low, not exert a lot of energy because you don't have the energy to spare, when in reality they actually do. It's kind of the brain tricking itself with this mutation, which is really neat.
Yeah, yeah. So our thought experiment, as they often do, they begin to fork into, you know, certain, we have to choose a direction. So in one direction is sort of like, essentially what happens with these dogs is they have an unfortunate condition where they just eat and eat and eat and they get super overweight. And that's like a super malfunction, right? Mm-hmm. But what I'm thinking is that, but tell me if this is the direction you want to go. I was thinking that, you know, just what if we were more like some of those, what if we just had to eat all the time, you know, to be normal, you know?
Yeah.
Because otherwise, the story just stops really quickly. Or we just wind up like those people in the Wall-E, you know, floating around and watching TV. You hear statistics like this animal needs to eat a certain percentage of its body weight every day, or, you know, these vast amounts of things. So let's just say, what if we had to eat all the time? How would that change our world? So my favorite way to start this is you wake up in the morning and this is the world we're in now. You have to eat all the time. So you have breakfast, whatever your breakfast is, as we would normally. But then how does your day progress? And we can see now how it's going to be different from normal.
Yeah, yeah. So I think there's a couple things that we have to talk about if now we're like in, we have to eat all the time, right?
Yeah.
That means that we have an insanely fast-running metabolism.
Uh-huh.
That we are way more active than we probably actually are currently. So it's not a matter of just like you have to eat all the time because you feel hungry. It's because, you know, that happens because you're burning it off. So you basically, I guess, roll out of bed and I don't know, for us, like we're not like really built for this, but assumably like you're basically a hummingbird. You were vibrating in place.
Yeah.
You are just kind of constantly running or moving. Like, you know, you sprint to work. You don't take the bus.
Yeah.
Just things were like, you know, we're not generally built like this, like very high energy creatures. Most of our habits are not like this.
Right, right.
So we would probably be very, very different organisms. A second thing is that, you know, it's either you have high metabolism or you have extremely low nutrient dense food. So like giant pandas have to eat almost all the time, but that's because bamboo does not have that much nutrients. So either we as a society are, you know, now sprinting to work and are super, super energetic and essentially bouncing off the walls nonstop, so therefore we have to eat more, or for some reason the food that we're eating is not nutritionally sufficient or is like very like low calorie. Essentially, if you're a human being where all you can eat is celery, you have to eat celery all the time in order to get enough calories to fuel yourself.
Yeah. Well, I think the super high metabolism thing is super fun, but I think that one thing I think is kind of fun sometimes with these thought experiments is that we change as little as possible. So in other words, that is like a totally, I would love to run that scenario sometime, but I feel like it would be interesting just to see the first, or maybe we'll get to it towards the end here, but let's start out with just that our food is low nutrients for whatever reason. Right. So we have to keep eating all the time in order to maintain the kind of life we have here in the real world. In the scenario, we have to eat a lot. So, maybe we have to walk around. Everyone has to walk around with giant backpacks full of what do you call those bars? Kind bars or the breakfast bar. What are they called? I can't remember.
Yeah, I mean, those are like designed to be like specifically like really nutrient packed. So it's like
right. We
would probably have to develop ways in order to condense, like. Say we are like now the koalas, where we can only eat very, like, koalas only eat like eucalyptus leaves, and apparently they're extremely picky, where they'll only eat leaves of like a tree from their area. Like, you can't feed them like trees from a eucalyptus tree like halfway across the country because they're like, no, it's different.
Wow.
I won't eat it. So let's say we're extremely picky in that way. We only eat one food that happens to be pretty nutrient poor.
Yeah.
Starting out as humanity, we're probably going to run into a lot of problems. Or think about just how much of our time has to be dedicated to just acquisition of that food.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it might be hard. Like, agricultural societies would still benefit us, but we also can't grow like a variety of crops. We can't, you know, farm other animals for meat. We can only farm as much of this one thing that we eat as possible, which might kind of thin out human societies. It might put a bit of a lower cap.
Yeah.
But say that we're still people. We're still kind of clever. Kind of. Well, we're clever. I'll give us more than that. We're clever.
Yeah.
So much like you're saying with the kind bars, yeah, I'd like to think that we would figure out some way to sort of get more nutrients out of the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So humanity-wise, historically, cooking food is actually one of these ways that we get more nutrients out of a thing.
Right.
We can digest things easier, get more nutrients out of it because it's more available after it's been cooked and things have already partially been broken down. So for us, that's how we've gotten more calories out of the same food. In my head, I'm imagining some the most like watery plant I can, like essentially like celery. And I can't imagine that there's some way to like super condense it down, but maybe we just kind of boil these things into like a slurry that just really condenses down the amount of celery that we can consume per second.
This is a nightmare. I can't stand celery.
I hate celery too.
Oh, good.
Everybody tells me I'm insane.
Yeah.
Like celery is something that like has no taste. It does.
Oh,
the taste it has sucks. You're lying to yourselves, people who like celery. You've hit on a secret hatred of mine.
I'm so glad to find a fellow celery hater. This is how bad celery is. That even with
Durant the if on our celery
we need to take a time out here. A moment for this is a safe space. Celery is so bad that even with a ton of peanut butter on it, it's still gross. You know?
I've always thought that's such a bad combination. Like the taste of celery does not necessarily go with the taste of peanut butter. You're just trying to drown it out.
That's right. When Elvis ate his sandwiches, he ate peanut butter and banana. Sandwiches. See, that's a good combo.
Yeah, that's celery, class.
No, it's celery, no good. Okay, so so this is what this nightmarish if has become, that humans must eat celery slurry constantly. Eat or drink or sort of maybe it's like a smoothie kind of thing. So I had an image of a baseball game happening, and the baseball players are on the field. And I was trying to think, how frequently do we need to eat, you know? And I would say it's pretty frequently. So in other words, you hit the ball and you run to first base, you're completely out of energy now. You need to, you know, have more of your celery slurry. And so basically they have to have on the field with them, maybe they're wearing like, you know, like tanks on their back, like scuba diving tanks or something like that, with a hose that goes into their mouth that they can just squeeze a little.
Well, I think too, like thinking about it, like our sports will probably look really different than baseball, right?
Yeah.
Because one of the things about us as people is we are able to essentially like store energy fairly well. We don't have like the crazy highest metabolism. If anything, like baseball, the continued existence of baseball would work best in like that option one scenario where we have really high metabolisms, but that's because we are very, very active. Yeah. In this, we probably can't be as active. We're operating more on like the giant panda kind of thing, where we have to be a little bit slower moving to conserve energy because the only food that we have is so low in calories that we can't get much energy from them. So baseball might be a little bit more like, instead of having soccer, foosball might be like the only equivalent that we have because it doesn't require you to run. You could maybe play foosball in a really high wheelie chair if you had to. Like essentially, if we are adapting to nutrient poor food,
right,
we are going to be a lot slower. Like we're going to need a slower metabolism, which means that we're going to be, when I said like koalas, like very much like that, like koalas, sloths, giant pandas, we are now extremely chill and constantly eating celery.
Well, the thing is though, when you move that slowly normally, then the entertainers of your species don't need to move that fast, because just moving a little bit faster is like, oh my goodness, look how fast.
Yeah, that's, yeah, like this is our fastest snail ever. And
yeah,
it's just,
yeah, that's right. So now, how, you know, we also must have giant, like the food production pipeline would be quite fascinating. You know, another, basically just like enormous amounts of, celery slurry would have to be piped in. So for instance, we'll go back to the stadium. So it's a stadium, but instead of playing, they're playing baseball. It's a foosball stadium, right? So, you know, 50,000 people are sitting around watching some guys play foosball on giant screens projected above them. And everyone's excited, but every single person in the audience and in the stands and every player, you know, is just constantly having to suck on their celery slurry straw. And
oh, yeah.
So there must be just like Well, I guess they would have to have like basically like almost like plumbing to each seat, where you just get it would just have to come out of a pipe or something.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if it's fully liquid, then yeah, ew.
Well, I'm imagining a smoothie, which I don't love smoothies either. So I think it's that consistent.
That or it's like you get like camelbacks of what's that? Like you've never seen this. It's like a essentially if you're hiking, it's like a backpack of just water that has like a little straw to it.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So like each person bringing their own camelback of celery smoothie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or shout out to Dune 2, which I assume you haven't seen yet because you're working on your PhD.
Yeah, I have not seen it yet.
Yes. Another side note here, Dune 2, very excited to see it. And the tickets to see it in IMAX were more rare than the spice. They had to go like 2 weeks out. So I think next week I'm finally getting to see it with a friend. So very excited about that. But in Dune, if you haven't seen it or whatever, they're on a planet, a desert planet, and the natives of that planet have these kind of suits that, you know, conserve as much water as possible. But they have a straw that goes right to their mouth. So they always get a little bit of this water.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. The spice. So, we have this indoor plumbing, you know, in stadiums. And so everywhere you go, there just has to be this stuff everywhere. So how is it manufactured? There must be fields of celery, vast fields of celery.
Yeah. So I think one, like I said, I think the maximum amount of people that we have must be different than it is now. Because one of the big successes of humanity is that we can eat just about everything. We have the ability to get nutrients from a lot. The shutting that down means that all of our, like the amount of calories per square foot that we can get is probably a lot less than we can now. Mm-hmm. Unless I'm going to learn something from the audience later where somebody sends in a message and they do some ridiculous math. It's like, well, actually, I'm fully accepting that maybe somehow I'll be proved wrong there, but I'm based on the how we've been going with this, if the calories per square foot that we're going to get is going to be a lot less. So there's probably going to be a lot less people. So cities might be smaller and less dense. Mm. We're still going to have to get a lot more calories. And I assume that what's going to happen is that in places that are going to be more dense, we're going to need to develop ways to nutrient condense as well. So like, what's the kind bar equivalent that you can do with celery? Like, can you remove just the liquid water to evaporate it out into some kind of celery bar?
For those who don't know, there may be people who don't have kind bars or don't know what that is. What do you call them? The generic term for those things?
It's like a granola bar, but granola it's like a power bar kind of thing.
Yeah,
or like
exactly.
It's probably got like a little bit. However, it's built like is calibrated. So, like, if you're on a hike, you get like sugar and a lot of like protein, and stuff like that.
Yeah,
that's probably something that doesn't really happen in this new. We probably don't go on hikes. Really outdoorsy.
Well, you have to go. So you go on a hike, but you'd have to be pulling a wagon behind you with an enormous like tank, you know, of celery slurry. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think we're either going to have to live very, very close to our food sources or develop ways to increase the nutrient density of what we're eating the further away that we live from the available food source. Because the speed at which we would need to keep having fresh celery trucked in is way too much to allow a city like New York to ever exist, unless you can essentially condense the calories of 100 pieces of celery into something like smaller. So the volume of raw celery being like, and what I'm saying is what I'm saying, making sense.
Yes. Yes. Okay. I was imagining that, we could have, offshore, in other words, vast floating in the oceans, just cause there's a lot of room there, vast floating, celery farms, right? The celery grows. And then, on the shore, on the beach, let's say, are gigantic industrial complexes that grind up the celery and, you know, turn it into this slurry. And then there's huge pipes and it's just piped right into the city and then it comes out. Like, there's just celery slurry, like water fountains everywhere, you know, just so you always have it handy. And of course, you know, the rich, so like the very fancy people would have, you know, really elegant slurry plumbing, you know. Whereas the poor would have to gather around communal
fountains.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. For some reason, this has me thinking a little bit of Exhalation, I think, is the short story, Ted Chiang. It has a really interesting first line, if it's the one that I'm, again, my name, then, let me just see. Exhalation is the compendium of stories. And I think it's one of the ones in there, but maybe I'm just completely incorrect. Anyway, it starts with the line, like, essentially about, like, every day I, like, you know, you go to, like, the refilling station and pick up two lungs heavy with air.
Oh, that's great. Wow.
So it kind of is making me think that, like, if we all have, like, camelbacks of celery juice.
Yeah.
Every day you have to go get that, like, refilled. Because assumably, like, yes, eventually in some places there's going to be infrastructure, but not every job can constantly take advantage of that infrastructure, right? Like, yes. Somebody has to do shipping. So you're moving, so you can't take advantage of, like, constant piping.
Right.
So the idea of, like, filling stations or fountains, where essentially you go and you get a big backpack full of celery juice and you drink that. And then, you know, in the time it takes you walking very slowly to finish that entire thing, you can stop at the next one, fill up, and keep going.
Yeah. I just had the craziest image, which is completely implausible, but I had an image of a gigantic, like a very cyberpunk vision of a gigantic Zeppelin floating over a city, an enormous Zeppelin that's full of celery slurry. And then there's just millions of straws that are, you know, long, flexible straws coming out of this. And everyone, you know, walking around the city can just grab a straw.
A really big straw.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And get a little sip, you know.
Truly, we have come to, I think, both of our nightmare scenarios. I cannot imagine what this world would smell like with this much celery.
Yeah.
I'm appalled. This might be the worst thing that we've created in, what, like 4 years that I've been on this show? Yeah, this is bad.
Exactly.
Sorry to any celery lovers. This is a celery hate podcast now.
Yes, yes. Suzanne, you know who you are. You love celery and you tell me I should too, but I don't. I was then imagining what do people do? How does the city grow? So in other words, we like to step on the gas, as we say, and go very far into the future. So this city develops, you know, we take the scenario further and further and further. What happens? One thing that came to mind was they develop a space program or they have a space station. Imagine that we have a space station, but there has to be a whole another space station just for celery slurry, you know, that has a long straw.
Well, isn't there something about, like, launching, like, liquids in space? Like, some of these things are kind of difficult to do, and, like,
well, it's heavy. It's incredibly heavy
as hell, and it moves.
Yeah. Yes,
like, and there's fluid dynamics involved that might create, like, spin that you're not.
Yeah, I mean, it's part. I mean, that's what rockets deal with that all the time. So we've conquered it.
We figured it out. Assumably, our panda equivalents will as well.
Yeah. But I think this may cause us to build the space elevator, because I think you would just need a constant flow of celery slurry from Earth to the space station. I think you just need a direct connection. Otherwise, you just imagine launching gigantic tanks of celery slurry into the air.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny, right? Like, you think, so the early, like, astronaut food, a lot of it was extremely calorically dense.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of stuff that, like, you know, was added to, like, you know, a bunch of added sugars and fats and stuff like that.
Yeah,
because they were trying to, in as little weight as possible, provide the maximum amount of nutrition.
Yeah.
This is that same problem that I was talking about with, like, cities. Like, we have the amount of, like, weight that's unimportant and is not, like water weighs a lot, right? If you could dehydrate this and turn it into, like, a granola bar, you'd solve your problem. If you are devout on keeping it smoothie, like, let's say these astronauts are like, no, they need the taste of home. They need constantly this to be a smoothie. How dare you suggest turning this into a bar? Then, yeah, you're going to run into a lot of problems. Like, you're going to need just as much fuel to get that thing on the space as you're going to need celery juice.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just going to be a hot celery juice. Oh, hot. Sorry. God. Bad thoughts.
Is there a danger to being do the koalas have health problems because they have such a narrow diet,
or
they
just adapt? So koalas specifically, they eat eucalyptus, which is toxic. And like they're able to tolerate it, but it does eventually build up. So koalas are basically just constantly eating something that's sort of messing with their brain.
Yeah,
and also eucalyptus trees are like highly flammable. So they're basically just eating like poison dynamite all the time. Ecological niches are fascinating. Yeah. Truly, you can live in some weird places. So one of the things that I'm thinking about, like at least for us as our hypothetical koala selves, we're probably going to run into problems with like monocultures and. Like, God forbid there's a celery blight, our entire population collapses.
Oh, right.
For example, like I've said, humans are omnivores and able to eat an extremely wide range of foods. Mm. A lot of stuff that we eat is toxic to other animals. For example, like garlic is toxic to other animals. We're able to process that perfectly fine. And like, we're not too affected if, for example, one of our food sources dies out because there's plenty of other things that we could turn to. So, for example, like when the banana blight happened and a bunch of different varieties of banana got wiped out, we didn't entirely die because we can eat more than bananas, and also we had different cultures of bananas. Assumably, we may have different cultures of celery in this new reality. But God forbid there's a bug or something. Mm-hmm. That becomes really, really good at preying on just this one, you know, preying on celery because there's so much of it around now that, you know, we're going to be really screwed if celery's all we can eat and something else becomes really, really, really good at eating our celery.
Yeah. Or there could be anti-celery terrorists, you know.
Yeah, that might just be you and me invading this reality.
We just hate it so much.
We just hate it so much. Oh, that made me think of something else and I completely lost the plot. Rip. Monocultures about, not specifically a monoculture thing, but like, you know, crop rotation is kind of a thing where you plant different things at different times because different plants, different crops will take more of some type of nutrient or another from the soil. And some, like beans, will actually add it back. Beans are like good nitrogen fixers. They essentially help keep nitrogen in the soil, which is important for other plants. The problem then is if you're only growing the same type of plant in the same fields all the time and you have such a demand, you're going to nutrient strip your soil. So there's a chance that, I mean, like I've mentioned, like I don't think our societies would grow as big because I think some of the unsustainability of farming just celery all the time everywhere across the globe is going to come back to haunt us.
Yeah, it was interesting, actually. What would happen is we actually would wind up a little bit like the what do they call them? The Fremen in Dune, the natives live in the desert, and where water is so scarce, you know, they have to conserve it enormously, and they just drink it like as little as possible. That's what would happen with our celery slurry. It would become so precious. There was a period in our history where it was in abundance and it came out of every hole in the wall. But then as time went on, it became very scarce and we were down to little thimbles worth of celery juice.
Oh, they'd just die.
And then they just die.
Straight up. Yeah. They would just die. Like, yeah. I mean.
Yeah. And then the space missions were launched, however, and they become the only ones who survived. And they are traveling through space with the largest tank of celery juice ever known. And they have to find another planet to live on, where they can
take over with that terrible vegetable.
Exactly. And the aliens don't know what's coming for them. That's how they'll fight their battles.
Really, there's certainly a science fiction premise there, but it's not the most evocative, I think.
It's sponsored by the Celery Board.
Yeah.
The Celery Association.
A commission for Eat More Celery.
The commission. Exactly. All right. So just to wrap up, you wake up in the morning and just give us a quick description of your day. You turn on the, you go into the kitchen and you pour yourself a thick glass celery juice. Yeah. Celery slurry. Excuse me. Yeah.
I come out of some deep sleep. We're pretty low energy, so you sort of generally slowly roll out like a sloth, get to the kitchen, you know, pour yourself a very tall glass of celery juice, drink that, you know, probably do one thing, you brush your teeth, get another thing of celery juice. You take a shower, get another thing of celery juice. Just like...
You take a shower in celery juice.
Oh. Nightmare, Phil. Nightmare. Yeah, and then just like at every point, any task you're doing is punctuated before and after with the consumption of your extremely low nutrient food. And also probably during, you know, you're typing on the computer in your office job in this celery hell world with your straw in your mouth going to, you know, a gallon jug of celery.
Yeah, that's right. Every computer would have a tank of celery slurry attached to it, you know, just so you could sit there and not stop working. And then how does your day end? What do you do for entertainment?
Well, let's see. We're probably not having baseball, like we said.
Not dancing.
No. You know, we're probably going to, maybe I'm a really big sports person, so I'm tuning into the foosball championships. Yeah. Or like chess or checkers or something.
Yeah.
Is like really like the main competitive sport.
Yeah.
Although apparently like chess grandmasters do burn a lot of calories just thinking.
I'm sure.
During competitions.
Yeah.
And chess is a great thing, but, you know, you can't think that hard and maybe the times are significantly longer. Like a chess match takes a week and a half so that nobody burns so many calories that they drop dead thinking about it. We have action movies, but they're very slow by our current standards. The action is that somebody runs once for 5 seconds. And that, you know, that took a stunt person who's in peak physical condition. And, you know, they give them an Emmy for the fact that they ran briefly. And that's just the height of cinema.
Yeah. An Oscar, by the way.
There you go. Yeah.
and then I think we can just end on this image that the entire the theater is full of the sound of people constantly sucking on their celery slurry. That's just,
Or instead of, you know, popcorn bucket, you just have like little chopped up crunchies of celery. And
yeah, exactly. Well, thank you for
crunch.
Thank you for going with me on this nightmarish apocalypse.
I hate this. This is the universe we should have blown up. I said we didn't destroy the universe that often. We need to get rid of this one. I'm sorry. Burn this bridge.
Well, we still have one safety lever that we can pull. And that is to have the closing ceremonies, and so to tie everything up. So what do we do at the end here? How do we get everything back to normal?
Phil, I feel like you deserve this honor. It's been a while since you've done one. And we both are on the same page here. So I feel like I'm gonna give you the opportunity to close the store behind us. Phil, right. What is our closing ritual?
All right. Well, before we do that, there's going to be you need to tie the universe back together. Gabby, do you have anything you want to plug? Do you have anything coming up you want to people to know about?
Not right now. I'll hold off on talking about stuff until I have more concrete deets.
All right. Stuff is brewing. Matt will be back next week. I'm excited to hear what happened in the history. Oh, he can't give us all the details. He can give us vague details. He's only allowed to disclose so much about the history of science crisis that he is saving us from right now. So I look forward to that. I do want to give a shout out to, I do know that April 8th is coming. It's 1 month from today, exactly. Ooh. As we're recording this. And that is if you are on the East Coast, or no, if you're in North America, anywhere from a line that goes from Texas through Ohio, up through New York State, up through Western New York State, through Buffalo. Basically, it goes kind of through Dallas, Cleveland, and Buffalo, kind of through there. Anyway, total solar eclipse, an extraordinary opportunity to get out there and see one of the most impressive sights in nature you could imagine. If you've not seen it before, go ahead and do that. And Matt will be speaking at the Rochester Museum of Science, where I will also be, on and just before April 8th. So some fun stuff there. Look up the Rochester Museum of Science to get more information about that. A quick thank you to all our Patreon supporters. Thank you for suffering through this adventure with us. Thank you for making this happen. Also, a thank you to the Celery Board of America for sponsoring today's episode. And I hope we made you
proud. We did not actually get any money for this, despite the absolute torture that we put ourselves through.
Exactly. God, we sacrifice for science, you see, and for education. And now our closing ceremonies, where we have to bring this insane universe to a close and find our way back through the one portal. There's a small flashing light above a tiny door in the distance, which we now begin running towards. And that is our exit point to get back to our original universe, where celery is voluntary. And as we run through the door and close it behind us quickly before the celery slurry waterfall washes over us, we must shout the name of the show.
What?
The
Thank you all for listening. Make sure you get plenty of fiber in your diet. We'll see you next week.